Look, a muti rattler.
The snake was one of the biggest that they'd ever seen. At least 15 feet from poison sack to bony rattle, its vivid color stood out against the gray sand.
More scared of us than we are of it, eh, Millie?
Now, how do you know that, John? Firstly, I'm about to lose control of my bladder. And secondly, that snake doesn't look scared of us at all.
The rattler reared up, nearly as tall as a grown man, its head weaving slowly from side to side. It was coiled square on top of a narrow ridge, in the partial shade of a big flowering cactus.
I think I could put one through its brain. I'd be more than happy to do it.
Best not to set the echoes ringing with a bullet. Keep watching it, and we'll go around.
Fine with me.
Doc looked around at the others. Pale dust folded into the creases around his eyes and mouth.
I will most heartily lend my acquiescence to that motion. All in favor indicate by saying aye in a loud, clear voice. Carried by a policy of silent acclamation.
Shut the fuck up, old man.
Peevish boy. It's time that you revealed more evidence of maturity, Michael.
Fuck maturity and fuck you!
They circled around the patiently watching rattler and kept heading for the Lawrence home. They were nearly halfway to the homestead, which nestled in among the low hills northwest of the redoubt, when without a moment's warning, Michael seemed to stiffen. He then crashed face down, raising a cloud of dust and sand around his prostrate body.
What the hell happened?
Keep off him a minute. This may be some sort of seizure. Let me check that he hasn't swallowed his tongue.
Michael's whole body was arched backward, and one of his arms seemed to have become trapped behind his head. Mildred knelt by him, still not touching the young man.
Arms dislocated at the shoulder.
I know, John. He trapped it when he fell. Airways clear. Some kind of clinical shock felled him, I think. We better try and get that damaged shoulder returned into place as quickly as possible. Turn him on his back for me. Slow and careful, please.
Michael's eyes were wide open, each reflecting a perfect shrunken image of the golden sun. His breath was slow and steady, his heartbeat slightly slower than normal. One of his arms was out from his side at a crooked, unnatural angle, his fingers hooked into claws.
Hold his head still, Ryan. John, take his legs and try to stop him from moving.
What are you doing?
Watch and learn, Dean.
Mildred sat alongside Michael, carefully placing her right foot into the unconscious young man's right armpit. The toe of her calf-length boot pressed snugly under Michael's limp arm. Doc turned away, studying the distance that expanded around them.
Forgive me if I avail myself of a rain check on watching this. I once had a severely dislocated knee while on a walking vacation, and the memory of the pain is still quite peculiarly fresh.
Now, hold tight.
Mildred took Michael's wrist in both her hands, bracing herself.
Good.
Mildred stood and dusted herself off.
He'll be a bit sore for a day or so. Muscles shouldn't be too badly damaged. Tendons and ligaments will have stretched some, but he's fit and strong.
She smiled across at Dean, who had gone slightly pale.
It's not something to try if you don't know what you're doing.
Michael came around a few minutes later and got up without a word. He rubbed at his shoulder, easing it a couple of times, wincing in pain.
How's it feel?
Like a clumsy, bloody bones butcher's been working on it.
You ungrateful, miserable little shit!
Christy took two steps toward the youth, making him back away from her bright-eyed anger.
Touch me and you'll regret it. Just leave me alone!
Limping slightly, Michael set off, leading the way toward Jack's place. The foothills were now appreciably closer. The day was wearing on. Michael had at one point gone 200 or 300 paces ahead of the rest of them.
What's up with him?
It doesn't matter. We can see all around. No dead ground. No real risk of an ambush. Rat counter showing safely into the green. I'd rather be without his company when he's in this mood.
Mildred walked beside JB, her quilted denim jacket slung over her arm.
I'm seriously concerned about Michael, Ryan.
What do you think's wrong?
The last jump seemed to slide him into a depressed state. That made him vulnerable to Dorothy's approach. Then when she vanished like that, it pushed him another few notches down the slope. I don't see the good signs of him climbing his way back up the slope. Maybe it's still a part of the trauma from being time-trawled.
I could greatly sympathize with the poor lad over that. There have been occasions, many occasions, when I have doubted my own fragile grasp on the rudiments of what sometimes passes for sanity.
A woman back in Harmonyville when I was a girl got depressed. She had great mood swings, weeping one minute and laughing the next.
Bipolar.
Whatever. She ended up slashing her wrists during one of the bleak black dog nights in a warm bath. By the time her father found her, it was way too late. There was nothing anyone could do.
You think Michael's permanently crazed?
It's hard to say.
Well, we can't go around in Deathlands with a triple stoop. It could get us all chilled.
The shimmering heat of the southwestern deserts, combined with the clear air and enormous distances, made distance judgment difficult. Even Ryan, for all of his experience, underestimated how much farther it was to the Lauren Ranch. The sun was sinking away to the west, and they'd finished all of their water, and the white roof still looked to be a couple of miles off. Doc was finding it harder and harder going, stumbling and twice falling into the soft sand. Michael had rejoined them and seemed to be making more of an effort to be friendly, helping Doc, and even carrying Dean on his shoulders for a quarter mile or so, despite the boy's amused protests. It was Christy who spotted a pale rider.
Someone coming toward us. Jack?
I see white hair.
It's Jack.
Ryan glanced behind them, making sure from ingrained habit that nobody was coming up from the rear. For a moment, he thought that he saw someone duck out of sight into a furrowed arroyo, but he stared hard and nothing moved.
Yeah, it's Jack.
Christina Lauren didn't share her young husband's delight at the visit of his old companions. She was standing on the porch, wiping her hands on an apron as they arrived. Little Jenny was beginning to walk, toddling from the open door, then hiding behind her mother's long skirts when she saw all the strangers.
I knew you'd come back one day, Ryan Carter.
Christina walked down to meet them. Ryan spotted the butt of a small revolver holstered at her belt, something he'd never noticed on his previous visits.
Sheer chance, Christina. Can't control jumps, you know that.
Sure. You come out of the desert like a one-eyed storm crow.
Shoo, there's no way to speak to friends, Chris. Stay a few days, guys?
A few. It's good to see you, Jack. And you, Christina. And the little one.
We were doing well without you, Ryan. Not saying you aren't welcome to stay a few days. We both owe you, the good Lord knows. But just for a few days, all right? Then you move on.
Sure. Few days, and then we move on.
The first of those few days were wonderful. The weather was excellent, from the cool clarity of the dawn, through the cloudless mornings and bright afternoons, into the mild evenings, where they all sat outside and listened to Christina singing along to an inlaid guitar that she'd bought from a traveling Pac-Man a few weeks earlier. It was a time for healing of wounds and injuries, those of the body as well as those of the soul. Ryan found that his neck was better, the wound finally clearing up, leaving only a small, puckered scar. Michael's shoulder also mended quickly, his efforts at exercise earning him Mildred's approval. 4 days slipped past so quickly and painlessly that it hardly seemed possible that they'd been at the ranch for that long. Christina's fears seemed to have eased away, and she sat among them, Jenny on her lap, laughing, joking, and sharing in their memories of some of the good times gone. The food was wonderful. After the vegetarian fare that they'd been given in Quimbley, this was fine ranch eating. Loin of pork and a sauce of apples laced with cloves, sweet potatoes, and a blended mix of buttered carrots and corn. Jack had traded some furs he'd hunted in the high country behind the spread, bringing home several dozen green bottles of a sweet white wine. Doc delightedly pronounced them to be better than a halfway decent Peace Porter Mickelsberg. The fourth evening found everyone on the porch. Only half of the setting sun remained, a corridor of gold leading to it across the desert. Jack cuddled the sleepy baby, while Christina sang quietly. Mildred was lying down, her head resting in JB's lap, her right hand folded into his. Christy sat on the edge of the stoop, leaning against Ryan's shoulder. Dean was on the other side of his father, silently playing jacks with the tiny black pebbles that are sometimes called Apache tears. Doc lay stretched out on the swing seat, rocking himself back and forth in time to the music. Michael stood at the far northern end of the porch, whittling a piece of wood with one of his twin daggers. While not joining in the singing, he still seemed to be a part of the group.
Coffee, anyone?
Sure.
Yes.
That sounds good.
How about you, Michael?
No. Nothing for me. I want for nothing. When you got nothing, then nothing's what you want. Sorry to be a downer, Mrs. Lauren. Can you go on singing, please?
Sure.
Jack handed the child to Mildred.
I'll put a kettle on the stove.
A man could get used to living out here.
We like it.
Jack vanished inside the building.
The light departs and by the three Kennedys. But I think that some specks of grit have entered my poor old glims and made them water most fearfully.
Sure is sad. Reminds me of the hymns those Amish folk used to sing. You remember, Ryan? Time with Trader when that sickness hit the war wags?
Yeah, I remember. Who was it said that the Amish were open people with closed minds? I can't recall.
Think that Abe will ever find Trader, Dad?
The little gunner from War Wag 1 had become preoccupied with rumors that the traitor still lived, despite a considerable body of evidence that said that he'd gone off into the forests to die from the stomach rat cancer that often made him puke blood. It had seemed in character for a traitor to crawl away like a dying animal to end his life in solitude. But the stories kept coming about a grizzled man with a battered Armalite rifle. They saw him in Portland, Maine. Then a day later, there was a word of him up in Portland, Oregon. He was spotted down on the Gulf and up in the Canadian tundra. So, Abe went looking. Ryan couldn't precisely recall now how long ago it was. There hadn't been any message, but communication within Deathlands tended to be, at the best, erratic. At worst, it was non-existent.
Dad?
Hmm? Abe Feintrader? Well, if the old son of a bitch is still to be found, then I'd back a hatful of Jack on Abe being the man to ferret him out.
What's that you're carving, Michael?
Mildred leaned forward, carefully holding on to Jenny, one hand supporting the tousled little head. The teenager walked slowly from the end of the porch, tucking the knife back into its sheath.
Been whittling away at my future.
Show me.
Jack had lit three oil lamps, hanging along the veranda. They gave off a gentle yellow glow, attracting a number of death's head moths that fluttered around the hot glass. Michael had his right hand clenched tightly in front of him.
Yeah. Show us your future, Michael.
Here.
He opened his fist and turned it over, allowing dozens of tiny white chips and splinters of wood to fall into the ground by his feet.
Michael.
Christy half rose, then sat down again, closing her eyes and putting a hand to her forehead.
There's my future.
He turned on his heel and walked away from the house. Later that night, Christy lay in the double bed she shared with Ryan. She was on her left side, facing the wall, with Ryan pressed hard against her from behind, one hand cupping a breast, the other guiding himself between her thighs.
Michael?
I guess so. Muties wouldn't lock the door behind them, would they?
Where's he been?
Walking and thinking? Fire blessed, I don't know, Christy. I'm starting to get seriously worried about him.
He's had some double bad shocks since we brought him around in the troll.
Life's never easy.
Ryan had resumed the slow, thrusting movement. He reached around Christy's hips and touched her with the tip of his index finger, making her push back harder against him. Ryan set his teeth into Christy's nape while she stretched her arm up and pushed a moist finger into the corner of his mouth, letting him taste her own arousal.
Oh, Gaia.
Christy's body arched against him, her strong stomach muscles fluttering with the power of the release, repeatedly gripping and releasing his hardness, sucking him deeper into her at the climactic moment. Moments later, Christy slipped easily into a dreamless sleep. Ryan slipped out of the bed, washing the stickiness from his body in a bowl of clean water, using a rough linen towel to dry himself. The night was warm and still. He pulled on his blue denim shirt, picking his careful way, barefoot, across the ragged tufts of the oval rug. He opened the door and walked out onto the porch.
Shit!
Ryan spun, He had left the 6 hour behind him in the room.
Can't sleep, Ryan.
Right, Jack.
Jack's blaze of snow-white hair, like magnesium, flared at the far end of the veranda.
Figured I'm going for a hunt.
When? Tomorrow?
Nah, got a man fences tomorrow. Day after. Get us some deer meat in the hills.
Sounds good, Jack.
Saw fire.
Where?
Ryan took a few steps to bring him closer to the teenager. Jack wore a cotton nightshirt in dark blue material. He lifted his arm and pointed out into the velvet blackness of the desert, to the northwest.
That way.
Ryan caught the feral scent of sweat and sex, realizing that Jack and his wife had been doing the same as he and Christy. Oddly, he found that mildly embarrassing, guessing that the same rutting odor would hang about himself.
I can't see anything.
Might be a lightning strike. Saw a campstorm that way. Didn't last long.
Ryan leaned on the smooth cottonwood rail.
Air's heavy. Could be a storm here.
Reckon not. Passed away behind hills.
You should know, Jack. You lived here long enough now. Still enjoying marriage and fatherhood?
Sure. Beats anything. You and Christy should do it.
Yeah, one day.
Wait for happiness and find old age and sadness.
Pretty deep thoughts for a kid.
Don't call me kid, Ryan.
They both smiled at the familiarity of the old shared joke.
There are times we miss having you riding with us, Jack. But I guess you know that.
Sure. Times I miss those days.
Guess I'll turn in, Jack.
Me too. Ryan?
Yeah?
Michael? Christina reckons he got a sort of black boil festering inside him. Gotta be cured, or she thinks one day it'll burst.
She's right. He lived a strange and enclosed life before he got jerked into this world. Seemed to have coped with it pretty well. Much better than Doc most of the time. But, lately, things have been setting badly wrong.
He get better?
Sure. Well, I hope so.
Man who pulls blinds down over his brain. It's a triple danger to everyone.
I can't argue with that, Jack.
There was a brilliant streak of silver light in the sky, touched with purple at the trailing edge, hundreds of miles above the heads of the two men.
Another chunk of rad shit. Amazes me that parts of the old Star Wars hardware are still up there. Never did any good when they were new. Certainly not doing any good now, dropping out and burning up.
Jenny likes him. Thinks real pretty.
Yeah, me too.
Already the smooth flare was fading away, back into the darkness, allowing the surrounding stars to break through again with diamond clarity.
Michael needs a cure.
Jack turned toward the door, a slight figure in the night. Ryan guessed he hadn't put an inch on the 5'4" he'd been when they first met, though the 110 pounds could now be closer to 120. With Christina's cooking, that wasn't surprising.
Maybe hunt after tomorrow? Could be just the cure he needs.
Kill or cure, Doc used to say.
Yeah, kill or cure. Well, sleep well, Jack.
You too, Ryan. Good night.
Good night, Jack. Well, I'll be fucked.
Abe woke up with a start, his hand fumbling for the stainless steel Colt Python under his bedroll.
What is it, Trader?
I don't know.
Trader blinked up at the moon, guessing that they were still an hour or more from the first light of morning.
Something wake you?
Trader was sitting up, his blanket crumpled over his knees, cradling his much-traveled Armalite across his lap. The cooking fire had long died, and only a wisp of gray smoke rose between the surrounding trees.
Yeah. Something woke me, Abe. You want to know what it was, do you?
Sure.
Even in the relatively few weeks since he'd tracked down the traitor, Abe had learned quickly that his former leader's temper hadn't improved with age. It was a whole lot better to try not to argue with him.
I woke up because I was having a real bad dream.
Trader stretched and pressed his right hand against his stomach.
Guts bad.
Yeah. Been better for a couple years or more. Used to be like having a pair of starving rats fighting in my belly. And it got better after I walked away from the Warwags. You remember when I did that, Abe?
Oh, of course I do, Trader.
Yeah. Went into what a Mescalero shaman called a remission, whatever that means. Thinking means I got better for a while. At least, it didn't get any worse. Last few weeks I've been feeling it again.
Anything help it?
Help it? Well, I heard that milk and stuff was good for it. True, that liquor burns like fucking napalm. Some fruit seemed to make it worse. Way I see it, I'd rather go out walking tall and piss drunk and hurting rather than 10 years on down the line flat on my back with a bowl of warm milk and bread to suck on.
Yeah, me too. Traitor, you said some dream woke you.
I don't remember.
Nah, don't matter.
Nah, it don't.
The beaver tail was skinned and sliced thin, then cooked in a skillet over the revived fire. Traitor had shot the animal as it emerged from the nearby pool, dripping after its lumbering swim from a large lodge of tangled branches. Abe had dug up some potatoes from an ancient cottage garden, nestling off a side trail, the ruins of the holiday home barely visible through the brush. There were also some massive mutated turnips, woody and coarse, but edible after they'd been parboiled and then fried. Traitor lay back, picking his teeth with the point of his slim-bladed dagger.
This is the life. Beats working, don't it?
Sure does.
When we moving from here, Abe?
We can go farther up into the Cascades, but we gotta stay close by the ruins of Seattle, ready for when Ryan comes up here after us.
He might not get the message.
Could be, traitor.
From where they sat, it was possible to see miles down a V-shaped valley, heavily wooded on both sides. A lake lay at the bottom, invisible beneath a white coiling bank of early morning fog. The dark place that had been Seattle itself was invisible, about 12 miles to the west. Over the past few weeks, Abe had been thinking a lot about the messages that had been sent. A large number of travelers and packmen had been given a scrap of paper, the words written by Abe. Traitor didn't have the way of letters or numbers. Success. We'll stay around Seattle for 3 months. Come quick, Abe. There was still plenty of time left, and the men and women who carried that message were spreading all over the wastes of Deathlands. Like a drop of oil poured onto a bowl of water, they would cover the continent, visiting nearly every ville and frontier settlement. They were urged, threateningly, to look for the one-eyed man and his red-haired woman, a small guy with the hat and glasses, a black woman, a kid, an old man, and a teenager who moved faster than a speeding bullet. One of the messages should get through. There'd been a number of times since meeting Traitor again that Abe had experienced doubts about the wisdom of what he'd done. It didn't seem at all like he remembered it, or how he'd expected it would be. Traitor had always been hard, that went without saying. You could walk into a frontier gaudy and say you rode with Traitor. Folks might not love you for it, but they would, by the living God, show you respect. But the hardness had been tempered with wisdom and with a sense of what was fair and what was not. Nobody looked to cheat or lie to the traitor and get away with it. At the least, you'd crawl away from a good smacking. At the worst, you lay in the dirt with rain pounding into your open eyes. Now, it was different. The man still had the same hardness, but now it seemed to Abe to be overlaid with a brutality that was at best casual and at worst considered.
Want another helping, Abe?
Nah. Yeah, thanks. I will. Good meat.
Better than Rattler?
Yeah.
Better than the baked tongue of a baby puppy, Abe?
I guess so.
The older man lay down, staring up into the moving branches.
Better than the earlobes of Mex virgins, slow-boiled and served on a bed of saffron rice with young peas and a cream and butter sauce?
I can't recall ever eating a dish like that, traitor.
I thought you was with us when we raided them horse thieves in Juarez, Abe.
No, I don't believe I was, traitor. You mean, you telling me that you ate that food you said?
You triple stoop sucker, Abe. I guess you fall for any dead trap I lay.
Yeah, I figure I do.
They got ambushed on the way to the lake. Two skinny old men, wearing rags and filthy furs, each carrying an incredibly antique flintlock pistol, stepped silently out behind them from the cover of a huge tumbled chestnut, taking Abe and Traitor by surprise.
Move them blasters and get to be dead.
Traitor had the Armalite across his shoulders, and Abe's big python was holstered. In Deathlands, you didn't look too much at the age or pedigree of the blaster that threatened you. The man or woman holding it was far more important. Both of the ancients looked like they knew how to handle their pistols. Abe and Trader turned slowly around, taking care not to make any sudden moves.
Smelled your smoke a couple of days. Seen you got pretty blasters. Figured we'd take them.
The muzzles of the flintlocks looked as big as railroad tunnels.
Never met a man yet able to take my blaster away from me.
But you ain't met Mick and Pat. We'll do it. Pat and Mick will do it quick. So you best lay the blasters down and then strip off them fancy clothes and you get to walk away.
Yeah, two naked jaybirds dangling off into the woods. Don't take too long to decide, strangers, or old Liza here might bark at you, and we might think about taking us some funning with you before you go.
Abe was waiting for Trader to make a move. He was as certain as he could be that the two old bastards would chill them the moment they put down their guns. They'd have done it from cover, but this way was safest of all. Trader himself used to say that when you killed someone, you tried to get 200% of the action on your side. They were only 20 feet or so apart. Safe range, even for unreliable flintlocks.
Make it quick.
No.
How's that?
You deaf as well as stoop.
Lay him down, Outlander, or
you know who I am.
Don't give a midnight fuck with a flying squirrel, mister. Just know you're cold meat.
They call me the traitor. You heard of me now? I got two war wags with 50-odd men and women within a mile of here. They know me and Abe are camped out in the hills here for a day or so, getting us some fresh air. They hear a shot, and they'll ring the place. Give you a hard passing.
I figure I did hear the name Trader, Mick, around and about.
He telling us the truth, stranger? You with the hair trickling down your chin?
Yep, you better believe it. I've ridden with Trader for 15 years, and I've never known him to bluff or to tell a lie.
It's easy to make a mistake. The damn shameful thing is to leap into eternity on account of a foolish moment.
Maybe we'll let him go, Mick.
Maybe we can, Pat.
Nobody gets hurt this way. Those are beautiful blasters. A man like me could take them away from you, but I won't. The sun's shining and the day's filled with promise. Ease down on the hammers. Shake hands and we all go about our business and make believe that this is just a half-recalled memory of a midnight dream.
Abe thought it was like watching rabbits hypnotized by a weaving rattler. The callous thumbs took the pressure off the ribbed hammers and let them slowly down to nestle snugly in the pans. The men's pistols were tucked into their belts, and there was an instant relaxing and a surge of friendliness. Mick stepped forward and shook hands with the trader and Abe.
Sorry about the misunderstanding, Mr. Trader. Glad it got sorted.
Sure. Sorry business to spoil a fine day with blood.
Pat shuffled his feet.
Me and my cousin here are sure glad we got the mistake sorted. So long, boys. There's good beaver to be had up at the pool yonder, though I guess you'll likely know that already. So long.
The two old men turned their backs and started to walk away from them along the trail.
So long.
They were 10 yards off. With unhurried, practiced ease, Trader unslung the Armalite and raised it to his right shoulder, winking sideways at Abe as he did so. He put a bullet through the back of each of the old men's skulls. The exiting Full Metal Jacket rounds blew most of their faces into a mist of blood, bone, and brains. Trader looked across the clearing at the twitching corpses.
Like a couple of stoop rabbits. Let's get on. Days a-wastin'.
Yeah, sure, Trader. Whatever you say.